Hello, and welcome to the last week of the June STC Roundtable. I'm Toni Mantich. I've been curating for the month, and this month we've been talking about the combined topic of leadership and teams. And today we're going to take a somewhat different approach. I have a guest for this interview today. It's Katie Ott, who is a director at ServiceNow, and she works in the organization I work in, which is product content. We're responsible for doing all of the product documentation for ServiceNow products and offerings. The reason I wanted to interview Katie is because she has a side job in addition to her day job at ServiceNow that's really interesting, and that has some unique parallels to her overlaps with her business life, and involves teams and leadership. So I'm going to let Katie talk a little bit about her side job. And so, but just to provide an introduction, I'll tell you that it has to do with football. So can you tell us about what you do when you're not at ServiceNow?
Yeah, thank you for having me. Well, I'm not at ServiceNow. I am the co-owner and what am I, my eighth season of playing football. So I co-own a team called the San Diego Rebellion, which means I run the business side of the organization. My business partner has a great football background and has done a lot of coaching and owning teams in the past, but I was able to bring in what I know about business from working at companies like ServiceNow and HP, what I learned in getting my MBA, and was able to help set up the business side of the organization from basic budgeting, team management, organizational management and development, and helping us get our 501(c) and things like that.
Excellent. So before we turn to talking about teams and leadership and what you learn on the field that you've brought to work and vice versa, can you tell us a little bit of background about how you got into football? Because this was not a lifelong passion.
I was always a fan of football. You know, I have memories of sitting on the couch and actually rooting for the referees when my dad and my brother were watching football. But I am a lifetime athlete. My main passion sport most of my life was soccer. I dabbled in basketball, dabbled in volleyball and softball, but I played soccer for about 30 years, and I got really far. Yeah, I played collegiately, I played semi-pro, and I loved, you know, the whole aspect of getting better every year and the new challenges that each additional level brought with it. And I was playing in an old lady soccer league in Boston, and one of my teammates tried out for the team in Boston, the women's tackle football team in Boston. And I went and watched the tryout. And then the next year she convinced me to try out, which I did, and I made, but I was also playing semi-pro soccer at the same time, and the seasons overlapped, and so I had to pick. And I picked soccer because that was my passion at the time, but then I eventually moved back to San Diego and realized there was a football team here in San Diego, and it was a different time in my life. And I said, I'm going to go for it. It was sort of at that point an unfulfilled passion and something I wanted to try. And I love it because my learning curve within football was dramatic. Whereas in soccer, I had sort of started to level out and I wasn't getting much better. Football, I was learning brand new things every day. I'm still learning new things. And I was able to, you know, I got to feel that feeling of getting better at something rapidly all over again when it came to football.
Great. Can you talk a little bit about how then you got into the ownership part of it, like when you decided to make that move?
Yeah. Women's football has been around for a while, and teams have taken multiple different approaches to how they run their teams. The first team that I played for was owned by a woman who her father had some family businesses that had run, and he sort of gifted one to her. And so she thought that she was running the organization like a business. And I was going through my MBA at the exact same time as joining the team. And I kept thinking, oh, she's doing marketing wrong. And oh, she's managing her finances incorrectly. And just kind of all the different, I was seeing all these red flags in the way that she was running the business. And so at the time, I just kind of filed those away and was like, whatever, I'm just playing. It's her problem if she's not running her business correctly. And then as I got into it, realized in talking to some of my teammates and my eventual business partner that we could do better and that we should do better, and that there was other women and other team owners in the U.S. that were trying to do it better, and that if we could partner with them, we could help build, kind of bring the level of women's football up from an organizational standpoint.
Yeah. It seemed to me, just from observing as we've been working together and I've been getting the weekly reports on your games, that you have really a developmental approach to it, right? You talked about making the league better and the mm-hmm. sport better, right? And it strikes me, just as from an observer's point of view, that that's a big driver for you. And I'm curious if there's a parallel between that, you know, how you do that and what that means to you as the owner of the football team and how you approach your work at ServiceNow.
Definitely. I say often at work that my job is to help people find the best versions of themselves and help put them in positions to be able to realize their potential. Same thing on the football field. You know, from a organizational standpoint, same thing. We're trying to, you know, elevate the way that we run our team, the way that the organization and the league that we're in runs themselves. I'm on the ownership committee for the league that we're in, and a big part of that was because I wanted to help make the league better. But it's the same thing. The same principles apply. You know, it's all about helping either the people on our team or our organization or our league find the best version of themselves and elevate it and take whatever skills I have to help bring that to life.
So one of the things that we've talked about before is similarities between developing teams mm-hmm. at work and on the football field. And you know, some of the management leadership models talk about stages of team development. Can you talk about your experience in football?
Yeah, so one of the models that you hear in a lot of different management courses or workshops is the idea of the performing, storming, norming, and performing model of team development. And I've heard it and gone through it enough times that it's in my business life, it's sort of status quo. You hit that storming part and you kind of take a break and then go, oh, wait, no, we're just figuring out how we all work together and we're going to be really good after we come out of this. And I had an example, my first year of running the Rebellion, we formed and we were all really happy. It was, you know, a much better experience than what we'd had the year before. And then all of a sudden, as people got comfortable, they started challenging each other or, you know, having small little conflicts. And a lot of the people on the team, you know, don't come from the business world. You know, they are either young, they're students, they're daycare owners, they are, you know, security guards at a school or tellers at a bank. They don't come from the same kind of business experience. And they were freaking out. They were like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. The team's going to implode and this is going to be a big mess. And I was able to pull out some of the documentation around the sort of phases of team development and send it to them and say, this is the vocabulary that we need to use. We're just in that storming phase. And guess what, guys? It's expected. This is normal. I'm not freaking out. You shouldn't freak out. And it's going to make us better. Like, the fact that we're pushing these boundaries is going to help build bonds that will build the foundation of our organization on. And it was true. We kind of got through it, and we ended up having a great season.
Great. So you mentioned some of what happened during that that phase of the storming phase was some conflict and conflict resolution, right, is a big part of leadership. So any parallels there or stories you can tell us?
Yeah. One of the big conflicts we had was actually within our coaching staff. So we brought in coaches that we knew, but from different organizations, and each organization has their own sort of styles and standards. And then we as an ownership team had expectations for our coaches, and they weren't necessarily being met. And it came to a head at a practice where we had the head coach yelling at our offensive coordinator, like fighting with each other, screaming at each other on the field. And so we managed to calm it down there. And I was like, okay, this we need to have sort of an intervention meeting where we sit down and we have a facilitated conversation where we all talk about kind of what's going on. And so we did that. We brought together, we said, everybody's going to come together. We're going to bring a meal. Everybody will make it to a meeting if you provide food. I learned that at work. And it was everything down to making sure that people didn't sit opposite, that like one side sit on one side of the table and one side's in the other. I made them kind of intersperse each other so that the conversation had to go around versus back and forth. I made everybody come in with, you know, something that they were happy about and something that they wanted to work on. And we had to make sure we got to everybody in the room. Everybody had a voice, you know, in facilitating that conversation so that we're able to talk about all the issues and have come together as a group with a resolution on how to move forward versus, you know, me as an owner saying, this is how we're going to move forward and you're going to follow my rules or you're going to follow his rules. It was really, you know, collective decision-making, and, you know, compromises were made on both sides, which is something that you have to do kind of every day at work.
Yeah. So leveraging a lot of the same skills and tactics, even, yeah, it sounds like.
Yep.
It sounds like from some of the descriptions you've given already that you've got diversity on a lot of different axes on your team. And we've been talking about diversity a lot during the roundtable this month, right? Mm-hmm. It was a kind of basic working hypothesis that we hear a lot these days that, you know, diversity makes teams stronger and it makes products better and it makes services better. So how does that play out on the football team as well?
Yeah, I think that kind of everybody brings their own perspective to it and their own kind of approach to how they learn. I think that there are, because we have different learning styles on the team, you often have players helping players because one person will get it when the coach says something, and then there's other players who have to actually execute it before they learn, and so the players are helping them as they go through the drills. You know, I think just having different levels of athlete, we have diversity in size, you know, and you need that to be successful on the football field. You need, you know, big, strong girls up front, and then you need small, fast people on the outside to run. And you, in football, one of the things I love is you can't be successful if one person doesn't do their job. And so we all have to rely on the diversity that we have on the team to be successful. I'm a wide receiver, and I need to make sure that the O-line is giving the quarterback enough time to block so that she can throw the ball. And I don't catch the ball if the O-line doesn't do their job, and I know that. And so appreciating all of that diversity is pretty good.
Yeah. I think that, for me, that's one of the key reasons that people so often use boards as a metaphor for what we should be doing at work, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I think of the idea of the I often think about baseball. I'm not an expert in baseball, but, you know, I always thought it was interesting that the coach of the baseball team isn't called a coach. They're called a manager, right? And a lot of what they do is make strategic decisions. A lot of those decisions are about leveraging the strengths of individuals, right?
Yeah.
It's about, and, you know, to your point, diversity matters, right? You know, you typically want to have left-handers to play first base, right? And you, and there are, and so sports to me provides a neat metaphor in that it provides a really easy way to visualize the importance of diversity in terms of skills and, you know, diversity is a much more complex topic about, you know, than that, because there are lots of types, you know, generational and gender and experience and even just perspective, right? So so talking about sports as a metaphor, I've read a few articles in HBR and elsewhere kind of challenging our use of sports as a metaphor and you know, critics who think that we might over-rely on that metaphor, that might be too simplistic. And one of the things that comes up is the idea that sports is about competition, right? And that it's also is usually a zero-sum competition. I'm a big sports fan, as I know you are, and we're going to make time to watch the World Cup tomorrow. But, you know, soccer has the exception that you have draws, but you still get points, and there's a larger competition. So I'm wondering if you want to talk about, you know, your thoughts about competition. I know you've got some opinions on this, and particularly about whether, you know, I've heard some people say the reason the metaphor doesn't work is because teams at work shouldn't be competing, right? Mm-hmm. It should be about collaboration. It shouldn't be about zero-sum games. So I'm just curious your perspective, since you have a strong foot in both worlds.
Yeah. One of the things that I learned when I kind of resonated with me most when I was in college and I was playing college soccer, I had a coach who really emphasized respecting your competition. So yes, there's the aspect of winning and losing and fighting against your competition, but there's also an element about respecting your competition. You want to go into a game facing the best competition that you can face, because then it's going to be a good game. It's going to be a hard-fought battle. And if you win, you're going to feel really great about it. And if you lose, there's still stuff that you can learn. And hey, you were fighting against a really strong competitor. And so I think that's the type of competition we should be looking for at work. We should be, you know, looking at people who are going to help us raise our level I have peers of mine that do really amazing work, and I'm constantly looking at them and saying, well, if they're going to raise the bar that way, well, I want to do even more so that I can, be in comparison or, the same level as them. And it's helped me level my game, and I'm sure I've helped them level their game up a little bit more too. So it's not necessarily about beating your competition, but more about respecting your competition and seeing how that can drive you to perform better and do more.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, right? And, we've seen this at play in the sports world in the last week as well with some of the debates about how the U.S. women's national team should handle games when they're really dominant and really favored. Mm-hmm. And I think what you said about respecting the competition is really important, that, the opposing side doesn't necessarily want you to play down or let them off easy, because then they don't get to develop, right?
Yeah.
So I agree on that score. So I also wanted to talk a little bit about your, in addition to having, these two jobs, you actually kind of have two jobs with regard to football too, in the sense that that you're a co-owner of the team and you're responsible for running it as a business and to elevating the league and all those things, but you're also a player.
Mm-hmm.
And then to make it even more complicated, you have a coaching staff, right?
Yeah.
And so with regard to that coaching staff, I expect that means you're the boss and you're also the recipient of coaching.
Mm-hmm.
So can you talk about navigating all of those positions?
Yeah, it's complicated. And I will say the first year we didn't get it 100% right. And a lot of that had to do with setting expectations for the coaches. So, as an ownership team, we have a level of organization and detail that we expect out of our coaching staff, and we just didn't get it. So we learned from that, and this year we made sure that we had practice plans in place so that we were in agreement with the coaches before we entered any practice about what the structure of the practice was going to be, what the focus was going to be that day, what our outcomes were, what we were expecting to become, to get out of each practice. And then we would meet beforehand to go over it, and then we would go to practice and meet players, and then we would meet afterwards and have a discussion about, okay, maybe we want to tweak this, or this drill was really good, we want to incorporate it more, or, oh gosh, that just didn't resonate with the women at all, and so we need to find a different way of teaching that component. But it really helped step away from that owner role while I was at practice and just being able to experience it and be a leader on the field, because I knew what the practice was, so I step in line first for drills and things like that to help the coaches, but really respecting their authority when I was on the field, and then taking any issues out and talking about it before or after practice.
Yeah. So I want to follow up on that notion of being a leader on the field, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the hypotheses we've been or kind of working assumptions that I've been using throughout this month and talking about leadership is that, leadership isn't the sole territory of people who have positions, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not, we see a lot of literature about, leading without authority or leading
yep.
from behind and these kind of things. And I really believe that, right? I believe that anyone can be a leader. And so can you talk about, and either from football or work or both, what that means to you, right? How can people be leaders without, a title or a position of authority?
Mm-hmm. It's actually a lesson I learned from my dad when I was really young, that no one has to give you permission to lead. Like, you don't have to be tapped on the head and told that you're a lead. If you see an opportunity to step up to help out or to do something, you should step into that gap and do it. And oftentimes that gap is leadership. I see examples, in the work world, but I also see examples, in sports of, just somebody needing to step up to, in sports, it's, maybe it's positioning somebody in a different spot. And, when a play is happening, in 3 seconds, you have to do that right there, or you can't wait for a coach to do it or somebody to say, hey, you tell that person over there to do that. We're all just kind of using our intelligence and understanding of the game and what we're seeing and trusting what we see to make adjustments. At work, it's really, you're doing your work and you see that something needs to get done and you know that there's nobody assigned to do that, just stepping up and doing it. Or, you know, seeing an efficiency. You know, one of the things I did early on in my career was identifying, you know, efficiencies. I hated doing repetitive work. And so I would constantly find a way to automate it or to remove that manual step. And, you know, at the end of the day, that helped me develop a reputation. And I was just sort of forming my own opportunities for leadership because I saw gaps or I saw, you know, little annoyances that I knew I could solve.
So building on that idea of, you know, everybody can be leaders, I consider part of leadership to actually help people realize their own leadership potential mm-hmm. as well, right? So, and that, again, doesn't mean necessarily aspiring to a certain title or a certain promotion or whatever. It means about, you know, to use some of your language, right, being your best, you know, being your best self and having an impact and, you know, kind of expanding your influence and impact in whatever way that mm-hmm. expresses itself. So do you have some thoughts, again, from either world about how leaders who do have positions of authority or, you know, managers or people who are leading teams can foster that in other, you know, members of the team or parts of your organization?
I think a lot of it comes down to mentoring, and mentoring, again, doesn't always have to be official. I think that if you find somebody who you mesh well with or you know, work with all the time and you're finding some good synergy, if you are a person in, you know, a higher level, I almost feel like it's your duty to help that person that you're working with all the time, who you're getting along with. It benefits you to have them do more, to take more of a leadership role. You know, I've got several people on my team here at ServiceNow who, you know, I can see great potential in them, and all it takes is me sort of setting the stage for them, talking about how they're going to execute on it, then walking away and letting them execute. I think that's a big thing that people get wrong all the time, is that they don't have that patience to step away or step back and let people execute in the way that they're going to execute. We all don't do things the same way. There's sure. many good ways of doing things. And that's something I've found a lot of success in the last few years, is, you know, outlining the problem space, talking about it with somebody, and then stepping back and seeing what they're going to do. And oftentimes they do so much more than I would have done. You know, because I'm so busy, I'm doing a bunch of different things. And by allowing them to flourish in those moments, I'm able to go over and flourish in moments of my own.
Right. And it gives an avenue channel for that diversity too, right? Mm-hmm. So they might do something in a way you didn't imagine, right? Yep. It could potentially lead to a better solution, I think.
Oftentimes
for me, yeah. I mean, one of the hard things, and, you know, I think one of the things we sometimes, as human beings, have difficulty with as leaders is letting go, right? Mm-hmm. Or delegating, right? And it's usually not, I mean, there are lots of different reasons for that, but you know, I do think this idea of developing people is really important. And sometimes I think about my mom. I remember lots of times during my lifetime where she talked about the moment at which your child kind of surpasses you, right? Mm-hmm. And teachers know this too, right? There's a point at which, and I think, my wish is that doesn't be a threatening thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's okay to have people on your team, even people who report to you, who are better than you at things, right? The job of the leader is not to be a master of all of the tactical things that have to happen. It's mm-hmm. about developing people, about being strategic, about helping with decision-making and prioritization. It's not about being the expert in everything. And yep. so by staying out of the way, you both allow those people an opportunity to grow, but you also can end up with better solutions.
Yeah.
So I feel like as we've been talking, we might have talked a little bit more about how what you've learned from business applies to football. I'm wondering if there are some other things that come to mind about how your experience on the football field has shaped your work life.
It's sports in general. Like I said, I've been kind of a lifelong athlete. I think the ability in sports, you have to collaborate with your teammates constantly. And sometimes you're collaborating with people outside of your team to get better. You know, coaches, you go to camps or clinics and things like that. So learning to network within those things. And I carry that over into the way that I do work. So I think one of the most powerful things that I can do is build relationships at work, and bring together organizations that might not necessarily be together from a overall corporate structure, but our needs and our customers' needs overlap. And so being able to bring, you know, my working team with their working team together to get a better solution for our customers. So, you know, learning to collaborate and do teamwork, I think that definitely carries over. Just general practice, the idea of practice. So in sports, you're constantly practicing. No one comes out of the womb, you know, able to you know, do really well on the soccer field or know how to do a perfect tackle in football. And the way you get better at that is to practice it over and over again, and you break skills down into, you know, chunks where you can learn. And that definitely applies to work. You can't expect to just be great at work. You know, that comes with practice and with putting in time, you know, learning about all the different ways of doing things, the nuances of how to do something. That's how you become great at something. And so that's definitely something that's carried over. Hard work, you know, it kind of goes along with the practice thing, but that tenacity to kind of always want to get better, always want to do a little bit more. And willing to put in those hours of extra work. You know, if I'm willing to put in, you know, 3 or 4 extra hours to perfect a move in soccer, I'm going to put in 3 or 4 hours extra to perfect something at work too. I understand that drive, and that sometimes you need to put in a little bit more to get even more out of things.
So I have one last question, which is getting back to slightly more personal, in the sense that we hear a lot of talk about work-life balance, and as if there's, and sometimes that makes me feel like we're talking about people as the schizophrenic, right? Like that work, you've got work, and you've got life, and they're separate things. And then in your case, it's complicated because you've got, you know, work and life, I think. So so I'm curious what your, you know, thoughts about even the notion of work-life balance is, but also how you manage it, right? Because you've got you know, 2 jobs that you're passionate about, and life outside of those jobs as well. So how do you make it all work?
Yeah, I am a really strong believer in work-life balance, and I tell everybody on my team that it's an important thing. And so then it's important for me to live it out and be an example. But I also don't know that they're separate all the time. So the whole idea of the blending work and life worlds, I actually think benefits people who want to have that balance. You know, if you know you're going to have a, you know, international call at, you know, 9 o'clock at night, it's a lot easier to leave work at 4 or 3 to go to your kid's soccer game or to go to your practice or go to the gym, or do whatever your hobby is. And so I kind of feel like that blended work life actually benefits people who have, you know, lives outside of their workplace, because they're able to do those things in hours that they typically wouldn't have. You know, 10 years ago, it was harder to, you know, say, oh yeah, I'm going to go pick up my kid at 3 o'clock at, you know, soccer, go to my kid's soccer practice just to watch and see the joy on their face when they see me standing there watching. Because it just was like, there was less of that sort of fluidness to the workplace. And so I actually think the way that we have work today, where, you know, technology allows us to connect at all different times, some people would see that as a burden. If you take advantage of it and you, you know, really stay to, like, I'm going to allow myself to have that equal time, and you balance it out yourself, and you talk to your manager about it, obviously, but it allows you to do that a little bit more on your own terms.
Great. Well, I really appreciate your time. Do you have any parting thoughts that you know, things you wish I had asked?
No, I think the message is just, like, if you have something, a passion outside of your work life, find ways to leverage the things that you use at work, or the tools that you use in that other hobby. Find ways to bring that into your work life, and you'll find that allows you to just kind of be more present and be more full at both the work life and the sort of hobby or extra life.
Thanks so much, Kay. You're really an inspiration. I don't know how you get it all done, but it's been fun to watch your story over the year and a half I've been here at ServiceNow, but also to have you share some of your thinking with us today.
Yeah, thank you.